subcommittee, and I'm opening up a subcommittee of the subcommittee to take a look at Senate Bill 5529, the Oregon Health and Science University. And before I turn it over to Mr. Bender, it looks like Representative Morgan has a
question. A comment, Mr. Chair. There's an individual out in the audience that bears a striking similarity to you, and I'm wondering if you know anything about that at all.
Jock Mills is the lobbyist for the Oregon Health Sciences University. No, I don't want to embarrass my brother and his wife.
He's already blessed.
Yes, so I'm very. We're honored. My brother Michael and my sister-in-law Bobby Metzger are here in the audience, and they probably didn't want me to do this, and I didn't want to do this, but I had no choice. So, having said that, so welcome. Oh, Senator, now we have a quorum.
Yes, I'm your quorum. Devlin will be back.
One came and one left.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now we have a quorum. Okay, so I'm opening up a work session on Senate Bill 5529, Oregon Health and Science University, and I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Steve Bender, LFO. We're going to continue the analysis of the budget numbers. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Yesterday, you were going through the various provisions in the Oregon Health and Science University budget. I did want to point out one additional handout that I've distributed to you today, and that is a single-page blue sheet, which looks pretty much identical to the yellow sheet, page 4, that you were looking at yesterday, and it is almost identical. There's only one change, and that is to correct an error that I had on the yellow sheet in the roll-up cost amount for the second item, the 75% medical class residency mix. I have reversed the numbers in the two columns in that row. The blue sheet is corrected, and otherwise there are no other changes. Certainly in the top part, the part that is boxed up on the top of that page, which has the LFO recommendation, there are no changes there from yesterday. But where we were yesterday when you had to adjourn is that we were going through the post-secondary education overview, looking at the differences between the co-chair's budget and the governor's budget for OHSU, and we had gotten through schools of medicine and school of nursing, and we're on to the Area Health Education Centers program, or AHEC program. And we noted that both the co-chairs and the governors included $80,000 to expand the K-12 programs that AHEC has in order to introduce students primarily in the areas where they serve, in the rural areas of the state, to potentials for health for careers in the health professions. There were a number of other items in the OHSU request that the governor did fund that were not included in the co-chair's budget. These included approximately a little over $1.4 million in general fund to hire a statewide director for the AHEC program and to restore funding to that program to levels that had existed back in 1993, which is, of course, quite some time ago now, before there were various reductions due to reductions in federal support and reductions in state support for this program. Additionally, they had requested funds for video conferencing and online education enhancements, which are not included here in the co-chair's budget. The amount in the co-chair's budget is a little over $4.4 million general fund and represents a 5.8% increase over the prior biennium level.
I have a question for
Senator
yesterday.
Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In our discussion on the post-secondary education overview sheet, under School of Medicine, I'm not sure that we had discussion about this yesterday when you said the further expansion of MD class size to 160 students. It's my understanding that 40 of those were 20 were to go to Corvallis and 20 were in Eugene. Am I correct about that?
Senator Walker, I see Dr. Howard shaking her head yes.
No. Yeah, I just didn't remember a discussion about that yesterday, and those are being cut, correct?
That's right. In the co-chair's budget, yes. My intention today is to go back and discuss all of these items, and including that one. So I'm hoping that we can allow Mr. Bender to go through, and then I want to come back to that because I think we need discussions on all these areas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. I think we do. We need to understand why that those decisions were made to place 20 students in each of those locations and understand why they've been cut.
Absolutely.
So I guess that would be where I would be at.
I'd like to come back to that one.
Okay.
Before,
yeah. When you're ready.
Thank you.
I think there's some angst, not just from me.
I feel the angst.
I think she's getting it from several directions.
Yes, it's an angst-ridden committee. So we have to...
I think I'll buy a giant challenge for the committee.
This is all about angst reduction. So, all right. Mr. Bender.
Could I ask some questions about AHEC, if that's in order?
Representative Morgan.
What I'm not clear on is, and I understand that your discussion around what the co-chairs chose to fund was based on them not wanting to put any more money into the agency, basically having some discussions around balancing the budget, using these as balancers. But the AHEC is, for the rural parts of the state, the window or the door that we've set in place for students in those areas who wouldn't ordinarily ever get any exposure to healthcare, to jobs, to careers in that field, to have a way to experience that and to be exposed to that. And so I'm just curious with the... what not making these investments is actually going to do in terms of being able to line students up to be candidates for the nursing schools and for the medical schools and to fill those voids that we have all the way from CNAs on up. What is this? What's the impact going to be? What are we missing out on here by not funding these programs? Much the same as the discussion we had about what we're missing out on by not taking advantage of the investment in the physicians program, the physicians training program.
Representative Morgan and members, I would refer you to the notebook presentation binder that OHSU provided, and behind tab 9 there is a response by them, or from them I should say, as to the impact that this these AHEC packages would have on their performance. So not funding those or choosing not to fund those will not allow these performance changes to occur. If you look at behind tab 9, the AHEC package is toward the very end of that area behind tab 9. It's about 4 pages from the end behind tab 9. You will find a page that looks like this.
Does it have a number?
It says AHEC page 1 at the bottom. And the title says Package Number and Description, AHEC Core Infrastructure for Educational Outreach Programs. The impact is, as defined by OHSU, would be the following. One of their performance measures is to place students, or to have their students, including the medical students, I'm sorry, if people haven't found it, I can help
you. No, I have not found it yet.
Do you have tab 10?
I have tab 9.
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's probably easier to get it. Yeah, it's right before tab 10.
It doesn't say AHEC.
Keep going.
It's not it.
Back up.
Let me give you my copy, Dan.
I think it's not here.
It's not here. I think you're right.
I'm just missing
it. Okay.
You should be the next one following this.
You don't have it. Yes, I'm sure. I don't have a copy. I don't.
Okay.
I wonder I don't have it. All right. Thank you.
What does this performance measure indicates are the number of student weeks that OHSU students are placed in Oregon community placements under the AHEC program. One of the primary functions or activities of AHEC is to help with OHSU's policy of having or rotating their students into rural areas for part of their education program. And as you can see, these numbers show historically how many student weeks students spend in the AHEC areas during each academic year. So, for example, for 06-07, there were 565 student weeks. I'm not sure how many. What's the typical rotation period?
6 weeks.
6 weeks. So a little less than 100 students were there for 6 weeks each, leading to about 565 contact hours between students and both practitioners and patients at the AHEC sites. You can see what the targets were for that. And the additional AHEC funding was to add to the contact hours approximately 10 or 20 contact hours per week, so per year, I'm sorry. So if there are 6 weeks per student, 10 would be like a student and a half, an extra student and a half would be able to be there in the AHEC area with this additional funding. Let me see if there are any other there's also a second performance measure on the back of that page, which is not one of their key performance measures, but community preceptors. The preceptorship refers to a situation where a student is placed in an actual rural practitioner's practice and is able to assist and observe practice while they are there. Of course, they're not licensed to practice medicine at that point, but they are, as students, they can learn and do some activities there. And you can see here the number of preceptors. They're already targeting to increase those amounts in the upcoming biennium, but there will be an additional impact of placing these preceptors in the rural areas if this is funded. I also think that OHSU would indicate to you that for the medical school degree program, they currently have it as a requirement that all students in the program do this rural rotation as part of their education. If the program is expanded, the number of medical students are expanded, and the AHEC funding is not allowed, they probably would not be able to continue that as a mandatory requirement. They would have to make it optional. So some students would not be able to be placed there. I don't know without the funding whether there would be an actual reduction in the number of students being placed there. They'd be the same level, but now that you have a bigger class, that wouldn't be everyone anymore. It would just be most of them.
Could we give a little clarity?
Yeah, I was going to call Dr. Halleck. Would you mind coming up? And while Dr. Halleck's coming up, I have a question. When you talk about expansion, are you talking about the 120 or are you talking about 160?
I'm talking even about the 120, I think. Mr. Sherman.
Can I ask a question just before Dr. Halleck?
Sure, Senator Starr.
And it's the statement, the last sentence that's on this AHEC page 3. It says, the intent of the program is to inspire graduates to seek career opportunities in rural and underserved areas of the state. And I'd like Dr. Halleck to comment on that particular sentence. I think it's important to Representative Morgan's point as well.
Chairman Galizio, members of the committee, there's also a memo that Mr. Bender requested that I didn't bring copies of, but submitted to him, explaining in more detail the impact of the AHEC funding, and I'd be happy to provide that for the committee. It does three things. Specifically to Senator Starr's question, the restoration request, the 400,000 item, and the 132,000 item put back the educational coordinators. That is not backfilling federal grant loss. That is backfilling state dollar loss to each of the centers around the state. That educational coordinator operates those K-12 programs. They operate the support programs for the medical student, nursing student, dental students who would be in the area. They actually secure little grants usually from foundations, and what the AHEC Center directors tell me is they can find operating funds if they have the staff to do so. So it's the restoration of those educational coordinators who both run the pipeline programs, the K-12 programs, and the support programs for our students who are out there rotating in the community. The $900,000 item is actually technical infrastructure, so it supports the OCNI program, it supports the video conferencing, Mr. Bender said, it's the technical infrastructure for the distance students and their connections to OHSU and to sometimes the OUS campuses, depending on the region.
I actually have a question. On the technical, don't some of those, you know, video conferencing online, isn't that some of that infrastructure already in place?
Some of it is and some of it isn't. It really depends on the location. At our institution, we're very dependent right now on the OUS bridge that we found that isn't adequate. We'll have classes go down when they're being delivered, so we've built one bridge. We have no redundancy. It barely handles the four campuses we now support. It will not handle all the community college campuses supported by OCMI. So it's a combination, and there isn't a formula. In each area, we sometimes have to put video conferencing capacity if they don't have it. Sometimes we need it on our end, and sometimes you need technical assistance so they can connect. So each bridge is a little bit different. But what we've done here, I was asked the same question this morning, and the initial request was for $2 million, and I said, no, that's just not going to, that won't work. And we've pared it down to what we think is the bare minimum to deliver all the program. So in our priorities to you, our request put the AHEC at the top of the list.
So if I might, just to kind of encapsulate this and make sure that I'm getting the picture here, without restoring the AHEC funding, and you haven't addressed the $400,000, but the $900,000 puts in jeopardy the success of the program around nurses training, because it's a part of the delivery system of the curriculum, is what I understand. The statewide education director is what facilitates health careers and also supports the rural placement of doctors. So without this person in place, will you even be able to place in rural rotation the increasing number of doctors that the co-chair funds?
Chairman Galizio, Representative Morgan, no. The current funding in the AHEC without these packages funds approximately 90 to 95 students in rural rotations. We do not have sufficient for the 120. We're looking at making it, as Mr. Bender said, an elective rather than a mandatory requirement because of that without this package. We also will be hard-pressed to support the OCNI rollout without additional resources for the technical support. And so those are all reasons why we put it first in our list. I think to get back to the $400,000 and Senator Starr's question, the 132 item is for a person in the program office, the central office, who really writes for grants, secures federal funding to support these programs, and coordinates the educational directors. The $400,000 restores each of the four sites that are around the state to their original base funding of $250,000 each, which would allow them to restore their educational director. None of the centers now have that director any longer because of the cuts they've sustained over the last. So that's very important for the pipeline programs. And I apologize that I didn't make this clearer.
Okay. I see. Thank you.
I don't know who's for Senator Morse. Senator Decker?
That's very kind of you. Dr. Halleck, just a quick, really simple question. If you could add one thing back, the biggest priority for OHSU, what would it be that's not funded today and that was in the governor's budget, and then just briefly why?
Hard question, Chairman Galizio, Senator Deckard. It would depend on the amount of money to hedge just a little, but the infrastructure of the AHEC is very critical. The regionalization in Eugene and Corvallis is definitely the next priority, and I know you said one, but in terms of building the infrastructure and capacity to ramp up the medical school, those two programs are definitely the next thing. but we need that infrastructure to do so.
And if Mr. Chair, if she's done it already, I don't want to ask you to repeat, but why the regionalization? What it, I know you've talked to us about it, but maybe just briefly why you feel that's just so critical to...
Chairman Glizio, Senator Deckard, I apologize. The regionalization program that builds on the U of O and OSU capacity and the Peace Health System and Samaritan Health System capacity gives us, I would describe it as a springboard, a platform to use essentially the skills of the entire state's institutions to build the medical school capacity. Other states are visiting us looking at this because they can't understand how we could do it so cost effectively. And the answer is pretty simple. It's the private partnerships and the U of O and OSU partnerships that allow us to use their basic science skill sets and the health system clinical skill sets to ramp it up. Now, this is a very dangerous territory. I'm probably going to get a hook in the back of my neck here, but we are promising 20 and 20. I and the 27 in Western has sort of the same flavor. Those are minimum promises. We don't want to overpromise. But once we have those platforms in place, it will be very cost effective because we'll have the curriculum in place to build on those. So that's why I think it provides us the best leverage for the future.
Thank you.
Okay. I think Senator Morse and then Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I understand, are we structurally essentially out of balance with the co-chair's budget in that they're looking to enhance to 120 students at $4.1 million, but nothing for the AHEC to back up to support that growth? And so you understand that presents a bit of a structural problem for you?
Chairman Glizio and Senator Morse, yes, I think it does. And I think when we tried to prioritize these, of course, it's always hard to weigh one against the other, but we tried to build them in the logical order that it would take to establish these programs. Another example is the regionalization, where that's linked with the state hospitals in Junction City and the psychiatric capacity we're trying to build in this state. We would propose to do it out of the Eugene partnership. So we tried to build those in a logical order. So, yes, is the short answer to your question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add a couple of comments to this. When this proposal to expand it to Eugene and Corvallis was originally proposed to me, I went and did some checking in at the hospital in Eugene, at the University of Oregon, and I talked with a number of physicians in the area about this issue. And the interesting thing to me about it is how clever the medical school has been to make use of resources that are already available in the community to make this work. We have a number of doctors, the specialists who will be participating in the education program there, and this may be in the form of a question in a few seconds, who essentially are contributing their time, because for them this is another aspect of their professional work which they haven't had the opportunity to engage in recent years. And in effect, this has the capacity of expanding our reach outside of Portland into other parts of the state. Now, I think when it comes to talking about medical education and perhaps even nursing education down the road, we expand the possibility of actually enhancing the interests and the capacity of the medical people in the communities outside of Portland because of the additional opportunity to participate in the education program as instructors or mentors or supervisors, and also increase in that little bit the likelihood that we'll be able to maintain people in the rural in the more rural parts of our state down the road as these things develop. I find this a fascinating innovation. And when you look at the costs that are involved, one of the ways that we can get the medical personnel we need without paying top dollar to build more facilities on the Hill, when we can use facilities that are available in Eugene and Corvallis currently and probably in other places later, this is one of those things we need to figure out a way to do. Now, the question, I guess, is do we actually pay those positions for that work, or some of it's actually pro bono to the medical school, isn't it?
Chairman Galizio and Representative Barnhart, it is absolutely pro bono. I'll admit that some physicians have been a little surprised by that, but the fact is all of the clinical training is in fact pro bono, and they volunteer their time to precept these students. The basic science classroom teaching, which is really the essence of this budget, is not. Those are faculty, and we pay their salaries, and that's really what we're talking about. By leveraging Eugene and Corvallis together, however, many of the faculty will actually teach at both institutions. So again, it's a highly leveraged model by using both institutions. But for the clinical years, absolutely, the healthcare providers and the health systems, the hospitals, are volunteering their facilities and their talents, and that is the heart of the leverage. And, the State Hospital in Junction City is an additional clinical site that really leverages the Eugene facility as well.
Thank you, Dr. Howell. Would you mind... Are you comfortable there?
I'm very comfortable.
Okay. Because I bet as we continue along, we're going to have more questions. So, Steve, would you mind continuing along here?
Dentistry.
Right. We got to get to the teeth.
Yes. There's a small difference in the School of Dentistry between the two co-chairs' budgets and governor's budget, and that is that the governor's budget included a $300,000 funding enhancement, which was not included or is not included in the co-chairs' budget. This funding enhancement has been indicated as that it would be used to help develop community-based practice sites for dental students. I'm not sure, I would ask OHSU, Dr. Halleck, since you're up there, I don't know if we've seen any performance measure indications for this particular package or not.
Chairman Galizio and Mr. Bender, members of the committee, what this allows us to do is to expand the capacity of the clinical years, the last 2 years of a four-year curriculum. Our rate, we cannot immediately, there by doing this package, expand the first 2 years, which are in a simulation laboratory and in the preclinical years, which is why we didn't increase the graduation numbers because of this package. But what it does allow us to do is, as we build that preclinical capacity, in 3 years, this package will allow us to have a similar situation to the medical school, in that all dental students would have a rotation in a private practice somewhere in the state, and if at any given time a third of the students are out in the clinical years, we could expand the clinical years capacity by a third, and then when we can build on the preclinical, we will be able to expand the class size by a third. But what it does is it allows us to develop over a three-year period that network of private practitioners allowing students to come in so that we can then expand the class size by about a third. So we're getting ready to do it, but it's past those graphs in the performance measures don't go out far enough, because by the time we admit the students and take them in and build that preclinical capacity, we're several years out.
And it would not be possible, even if this were funded, to expand the program in 3 years unless you received additional funding to expand the preclinical portion as well?
Correct, but what it does is it builds the model with the private practitioners who've never done this before in the state, so this is a big leap, so that when we start building the Schnitzer campus and expand the preclinical, which will be the first phase of development down there for the dental school, we'll be in a position to immediately take those students and put them out in the community and expand the class size by about a third. So we're maybe even more, up to 120 is what we're looking at. But we didn't, within the framework of these performance measures, we won't be there because it'll take a little longer than that to build.
That's so important.
Just within the context, Dr. Halleck, of allowing, putting a kind of a piece on the end of the dentist program that allows them to do a rotation out in the real world, does that have itself a roll-up cost, or is it going to be an increased $300,000 every biennium to keep this program functioning?
Chairman Glazio and Representative Morgan, we have assumed that it does have a roll-up cost of about the same amount. It may decline slightly because establishing the sites is the most labor-intensive part of this, but because we're doing it a third at a time, it'll take at least 3 years, and then usually you have to have some surplus sites because practitioners will come and go. So I would anticipate that $300 will roll up. It's possible it could decline a little as we establish these sites.
Will it go up? Are we talking about just an inflationary roll-up,
yes,
or we're talking about a doubling?
No,
just an inflationary,
roll-up.
Thank you. Are we falling for?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The only remaining items I think that this subcommittee would want to note further while reviewing this budget is that the budget as proposed also includes funding for two major programs that are not on this list that we've been looking at. The reason why they're not on this list is because neither the governor nor the co-chair proposed or fund enhancements to the base budgets, but these are two programs that are receiving significant general fund, and that would continue at the essential budget level and preserve existing programs under either budgets. And they are the approximately $10.1 million in general fund would be provided to support programs of the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, and approximately $2.8 million in general fund would be used to support the operations of the Oregon Poison Center. If there are any questions about these two programs, I can address those now. Otherwise, I think the remaining major item that we have for your review at this time is the proposed performance measures for the agencies.
So if I might, the increases in the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center and the Poison Center are just to cover the inflationary costs. It's just the roll-up costs is all that's in there.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Well, colleagues, I think what I'm looking at doing, unless there's an objection, is looking at the performance measures, and I think we could today probably
agree
on the performance measures. I'm hopeful that we can do that, pass the performance measures, and then I think we need a lot more, not a lot more, we need more discussion on the other items before we can come to some kind of consensus on the other items. So my plan is that we're not going to pass the major elements of the budget today. We're going to schedule that for next week, but I'm hopeful that today we can do the performance measure. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we could also do that. The only caveat I would put on it is that I would give LFO staff the latitude, based upon whatever we ultimately approve in the budgets, to come back and adjust the targets. Because clearly in some areas, even though you would approve the measure, if you don't approve the funding that would allow you to get that to that target, the LFO may in some cases, not at all, but may in some cases recommend a different target. I just want to put that on the record.
No, thank you, Senator. So a question for Steve. Would it be preferable then to simply have a discussion on the performance measures, or is it problematic to do as Senator Devlin suggested, where we perhaps adjust the targets? I mean,
on a future date, we might have to recommend adjusting
the
targets.
What's going to work better?
Our recommendation already includes adjustments to the targets that OHSU proposed as a result of the recommendation, including funding for the packages that are in the co-chair's budget. To the extent that you change those, there could be some differences. It does sound as though the differences would be limited to the changes in the two AHEC measures that we talked about earlier today. I think the other option that you may be considering is approval of the expansion of the MD class to 160. That would probably not have an effect over the time horizon of the performance measures that we're looking at, the targets. But we can look at that. I think it may be helpful to you, if you would like, Mr. Chair, to spend some time just looking at the measures and to see whether these are measures that you feel are appropriate and whether you want different ones or not. So why don't we do that, if that's your pleasure.
I would like to do that.
And what I would refer you back to is, again, the material that was handed out yesterday that starts with, that has the yellow pages on the top. If you go through behind the two yellow pages, the next four pages are the work session report, work session action report from Orbitz for the co-chair's budget. You have seen this for other budgets that you've worked on so far this session. I won't go spend time on that right now, but if you go beyond those four pages, you will see another table that again starts labeled page one that says final 2007-09 key performance measure and also says table of final measures. And the remainder of this staple packet of materials is the performance measures. So if you'd like, we can go through some of those. I would like to mention that the performance measures that you see here, which are the recommended ones, are a change from what were approved last session. The changes primarily reflect our recommendations of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim, which recommended that the number of performance measures be reduced. The remaining performance measures, of which there are 23, are far fewer than there were last session. In fact, if you look at page 2 of the performance measure report, you can see the list of deletions, which is quite large. But there have also been a few additional changes that LFO worked with the agency to refine some of these measures further, and we do recommend them as that you see them before you now. I think perhaps the best way to look at this would be just to very briefly talk about what these measures are and what they're going through, what they're trying to show. If you look at page 3, you see there are three performance measures relating to access to Oregon residents for positions and placements within the dental, medical, and nursing programs, respectively, 1, 2, and 3. And you can see that these represent the percentage of students that are expected to be Oregon residents in these programs. As a result of including the package relating to the 75% in-state enrollment, we have recommended a change in the target for 2009 for Performance Measure 2. The 75% that you see there relates to that package being approved and was not what was initially proposed by the OHSU.
So this is one we'll need to do something about if we change the...
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Other ones that you would potentially need to change include number 5, which would be the number of degrees and certificates. The degree and certificate goals or targets that are shown here do reflect the incorporation or the approval of the packages that are in the co-chair's budget. Number 6 shows the number of dental degrees awarded. 7 shows the number of MD degrees awarded. This also has been, these targets have also been adjusted for the package announced. Nursing has also been adjusted. This shows the greatest increase. As you can see, there's an increase from 230 degrees anticipated to be awarded this year in the 2006-07 academic year up to 368 bachelor's degrees in nursing by 09-10. And I believe that number is going to increase additionally in 2010-11 by a further 27, which would represent the first cohort that would come out of Western Oregon University. Nursing faculty...
Excuse me, Steve. Representative Jensen.
I just not quite sure that I'm understanding the reason that the nursing program for a rather dramatic increase in the 506 and the targets in 06, 07, and 08 remaining as they are below. Is there an explanation there for that?
There is an explanation that I'm aware of. OHSU may have additional explanation beyond what I'm able to tell you, but the nursing school at OHSU for in 1 year enrolled an additional cohort above the number that they normally did. Essentially, they took in two first-year classes 1 year instead of the typical one first-year class. This was something that they found that they were unable to maintain, and they have not maintained it, and they are now requesting additional funds to expand the program. Number nine, nursing faculty. This is also a performance measure that will increase to, I believe, 74 by the 2010-2011 academic year. That's the result of the expansion of the nursing program. I'm sorry, the master's program, and master's in science and nursing program that is included in the co-chair's budget. Just simply over the time horizon here, the first expanded class wouldn't graduate until 2010-11, and that's why it's not, there's no change shown on this particular chart.
Vice Chair.
Representative Jensen.
That's right. I'm just curious why the target is so is significantly lower than 58, 506, and there are, we have 10 or more than the target.
I think in a number of situations, the OHSU has reduced recently the size of enrollments in some of the programs, and the requests before you are to restore those program sizes, and in some cases over prior levels. Perhaps Dr. Halleck would have a further comment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
If those were restored, hypothetically, would those targets go up then accordingly?
Dr. Halleck.
Chairman Galicia, Representative Jensen, in the reductions that amounted to about 40% over several years in our budget from 2000 to the current time, we eliminated several graduate programs in nursing in order to protect the graduate capacity, frankly. And what we did is we consolidated them into broader-based programs. So nurse practitioners, we have adult and we have pediatric, but we didn't have as many specialty areas, and we reduced the number. The request for the 20 more grads here would increase this back, but in a very different way. It would produce nurse educators. So, and the first ones would graduate the year after this chart ends, if that policy package is funded. Okay. So that's why you don't see it. It's their graduation cohort would be 2011, so it's the next year.
Mm-hmm. I okay. Yeah.
Mr. Bender, could I get you to back up to number 8 performance measure and give me the 2010-11 number for graduates?
Yes. That would be 368 plus 24 or 392. And that would represent the graduates coming off of the Western campus, which would have been established, and that would be the first year that those cohorts would be receiving their baccalaureate degrees.
Please proceed. Yes. Sorry.
So these on this page, number 5, are the targets that are most directly affected by the particular funding packages that you've been asked to consider by OHSU and the governor and the co-chairs. Going on to some of the other performance measures, these relate to the ability of the graduates from OHSU programs to become licensed in the professions that they are seeking employment in. As you can see, measure 10 represents the target for the percentage of dental students who are able to pass their dental exams on the first attempt. The second, number 11, represents the percent of MD students students, a very similar measure, and number 12, the same measure for nursing students, baccalaureate nursing students.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Decker.
Thank you. I kind of missed on number 8. This is for Mr. Bender or Dr. Halleck. Why is it that it's double for a Western nursing graduate, or nearly double, than the others, and maybe the rationale for spending roughly double? Whoever wants to fill.
Go ahead. Senator Decker, are you talking about the cost per student?
Correct.
The cost... I can't recall if you were here when we had this discussion yesterday, but the cost per student at Western in the third and fourth year, certainly by the fourth year of operation, is the same as it is at Eastern or Southern. It is a little more than it is at the Portland campus, and so when we look at the capitation, we add all the students together at all the regional campuses and at the Portland campus, and there's considerable savings. Just the sort of larger class makes it more cost-effective in Portland, but we believe the regional campuses, although they're a little harder to support because you have to mount the whole curriculum for a smaller class size, are critical to placing those graduates in those communities ultimately. And so that's why we have the regional campuses. But there is a sort of offset in that the cost per student is a little higher. It is not more at Western than it would be at Eastern or Southern, except in that first biennium when we have some establishing to do.
I would also submit that without having the satellite campuses involved in the training, there's no way that you could turn out this many professionals. There just simply is no room to do this at OHSU.
Thank you, Representative. That's
right.
So are we, I guess, continuing on the performance measures?
Sure. Yes. The next performance measure 13, relates to the research functions of OHSU, and it shows the percent of National Institute of Health dollars that are awarded to OHSU out of all of the grants that they are awarding. This is a measure, I have had some conversations with OHSU. We are not specifically recommending any changes to the targets that they have proposed. These are the targets that the university proposed. However, we do feel that these targets are not ambitious given the funding that the state has provided for the Oregon Opportunity Grant, and for which we're spending $32 million per biennium in debt service, specifically to see that the target is really not to have OHSU capture any additional share of NIH funding than was the case before the Oregon Opportunity Grant funding was approved. And it would seem that with the addition of these additional faculty members who are principal investigators and whose one of their primary responsibilities on campus is to obtain research grants, it does seem somewhat of some concern that the institution is not increasing its targets for the proportion of federal NIH funding awards. I don't know if you...
Well, I'd be interested in your, Dr. Halleck's evaluation of that.
Chairman Bellizio and members of the committee, we have had many discussions about this. Over this period of time that's represented on this chart, the NIH budget has doubled. And so our absolute dollars has increased a great deal. We've gone from 138 or 167 million, depending on what year you start, to 264 million in total federal total grants. And we're just about at 300 million this year. So the percent here, we're sort of at it's a problem of small numbers. You're talking about the entire national NIH budget. A hundredth of a percent of that is a very large amount of money. So it's the percentage is very difficult to track here. It would probably make more sense to give you absolute dollars. We did do that in the presentations. Dr. Dan Dorsa went through, and I could show you the amount of dollars relative relative to the NIH, but we are increasing the percentage. And I agree, you look at 0.76, 0.77, it doesn't look like a huge increase. But when you think about it as a percent of our total budget, we really have gone from 167 to almost 300 million. So there's a really rapid increase. Now, we're at capacity. We haven't finished the building that half of the Oregon Opportunity purchased. There are still two shelled floors. We're fundraising for that, and those are beginning to be built out. But we've exceeded the number of PIs that have been recruited. We promised 71. We will deliver at least 100. We're already past the 71, and those investigators alone, just the new investigators, have brought with them $40 million in research grants. So we believe that this isn't a particularly useful measure, but that, in fact, we have more than exceeded what was promised in terms of grants obtained.
I had a question, Dr. Halleck. Would it be more useful if the universe of institutions to which, if you shrunk the universe of institutions instead of all institutions, maybe like institutions, or is that... Do you think that would make it more realistic?
Chairman Glizio, in our original proposals, we were looking at rankings of academic health centers, which is, I think, approaching what you suggest. And we do, for an internal metric and a performance metric, find that to be a more relevant metric, because then you're looking at least closer to apples and apples in terms of, you know, institutions that have a medical school, for example, and not necessarily a defense operation. And so we do track our rankings very closely. But in addition, we're looking at focusing rather than growing that research enterprise in the future. So unless there's another Oregon opportunity, so and trying to develop the spin-out companies, which are also increasing as we go forward.
So the quantity of the dollars and even the percentage of NIH funding might not even really capture what you're trying to do if you're trying to sort of focus. Is that what you're saying?
Chairman Glizio, we look at both, but yes, that's what I'm saying. What we are trying to do increasingly is focus the kind of research we're doing with the kind of healthcare we're delivering to obtain the best synergy there. But in absolute terms, the dollars have increased, and the percent of the NIH budget has also increased. So both are true.
The performance measures are really interesting things to start seeing with what you're measuring and the language you're measuring it, because part of the value of them is to continue to measure the same thing over time so that you can see what the trends are. And I think that most of them that I have had experience with, looking at the performance measure in itself and hoping for great illumination from it isn't usually where you end up. But it does serve as the basis for a conversation that leads to more detail. And that, I mean, I think that you could easily walk away saying if the denominator here is all of the National Institute of Health grants that are awarded to all the institutions, and OHSU is walking away with 75% of them, we should be really proud of that. That's a pretty amazing accomplishment.
Three quarters of 1%.
But I mean, we need to have a discussion about what's going on in the background instead of just looking at this as something in itself.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Halleck, I'm struck by your recent comments. I'm wondering if it would be more applicable if the performance measure were a ratio. I mean, if the intent is to measure the return on investment, then really it should be the ratio of dollars invested to the dollars returned through the NIH. Is that a more appropriate measure?
Chairman Glizio and Representative Edwards, we believe it would be. An ROI-like measure would be very useful. To that end, in the middle, I won't try and draw you to it, but in the middle of the presentation, we've looked at that sort of thing. And if you can probably just see the shape of these curves. And this is the growth of the research dollars. This is the NIH growth. And you can see the NIH is flat. And during that same period we have increased. But to get to the ROI, those same investigators that we've recruited have brought in this money during that period of time. The 06 was $37 million. Now we've invested about that many dollars in the recruitment packages, and in 1 year they brought $37 million. So that ROI, as time goes on, is going to be a very strong number.
Thank you, Dr. Halleck.
Please continue.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're getting there.
The next two measures, 14 and 15, represent opinions of quality care from patients at the OHSU Hospital and Brunbecker's Children Hospitals, respectively, and the percent of those patients who would recommend that hospital. So this is a survey-based response and is a measure of patient satisfaction with the care they receive at the OHSU hospitals. The areas number 16 is the performance measure for the Oregon Poison Center, and it refers to the percent of poisoning or toxic exposure cases that can be managed at home and that don't require a visit to a healthcare provider or facility. This Child Development and Rehabilitation Center services, number 17, is simply the volume of services that are being provided through this program. Hospital mortality is a rate of mortality compared to what would be expected for the types of patients that the hospital is treating. So to the extent that this ratio is less than one, in this case, for example, in 2006, essentially only 55% as many fatalities among OHSU's treated patients as would have been expected given the conditions that they were treating these patients for. And they have as a target to maintain that at no more than 60% of the average. Number 19 represents a financial performance measure. This basically looks at the consolidated net income from operations and is an indication of whether OHSU is able to generate revenues that are sufficient to fund their costs and to provide for ongoing cash flow to allow them to cover depreciation expenses and the ongoing costs of updating and expanding equipment. It is a very costly activity, particularly in healthcare and the types of activities that OHSU is involved in.
Sure.
Representative Jensen.
I wonder if you could explain the sawtooth curve on 19 in the recent years from 06 to the projections through 09.
I can explain that. Part of the, for example, I think I would be least able to explain 2000. I would ask Dr. Halleck for assistance there, and I'm sure she'll want to chime in with some of the other things I say as well. But actually, frankly, the recession that hit the state in the early 2000s affected OHSU as well as it affected almost all or great broad range of enterprises in the state. This reduced the ability of OHSU to collect on patient care and to pass through increases in costs of patient care that they might otherwise have been able to do in a more robust economic situation. The institution has been successful in turning that around beginning in 2004. There is a reduction that you see in 2007, and throughout the target forecast horizon, you would notice that the bottom line does not return to the levels that you see in 2005-06.
I believe that the principal cause of the reduction in income is that a number of the institution has recently expanded greatly. It has opened up two major new facilities on campus, a biomedical research center and a very large expansion of the hospital, the Peter Kohler Pavilion, and that the costs of these operating these expansions are now being incurred, and the revenues have not increased sufficiently to cover all of these additional costs, at least yet. And the institution is hoping that this is not a long-term phenomenon and that they will be able to recover these within a few years.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you want to add anything, Dr. Heller?
I don't think so.
President Barnhart.
Very quickly, does the institution maintain adequate reserves to deal with an event like O2? Because it's going to happen again at some point.
Chairman Galizia and Representative Barnhart, with respect to the reserves, we are trying gradually to increase our days of cash on hand, which is how those are measured, and we are concerned about that right now. We believe we've made good progress. Mr. Bender is correct. About 2007, we've opened new facilities, and we incur the full cost before we have the full revenue, and that's why it returns in 08. But it is really the phenomenon that's buried because these are consolidated is that the hospital really supports the educational mission to a great degree, and the extent we manage those expenses to be stable will be fine. But the other phenomenon that speaks to the sawtooth in 2001, for example, is that the reimbursements in Medicare and Medicaid to the hospital are highly variable and are declining. So that's another risk factor. They happen to be very good in 2001. There was a sort of extra reimbursement for some of the Medicaid, and that helped us a great deal. But that went away, and now we're watching that very closely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Dr. Howell. Oh, Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another one of the risk issues. We've really grown the research dollars that have come in. You take a percentage of that for your administrative overhead. What percent of your operating margin is attributed to that growth in research funds?
Representative, I'm sorry, Chairman Galizia and Senator Morris, that's a very insightful question. The problem with research is that it often doesn't recover its full costs, and so we manage it very, very closely to break even. We don't really expect a margin from research. We try and recover a full cost from research. To some extent, there's a small subsidy from the clinical operation there as well, particularly when you're starting up. And the Oregon Opportunity helped us greatly for a number of years. As that winds down, we have to watch very closely that we only bring in research that can recover its full cost. It really doesn't contribute directly to the margin. What it does do, however, is the synergy I alluded to earlier. If we, for example, recruit the chief of cardiology who also has a research program, the cardiology clinical services may contribute. So we try and make those, synchronize those kinds of activities. But it's something that bears watching because it's very easy to have a research operation that loses money, and that's something we really can't afford to do.
Thank you. Well, thank you for that question. All right.
We're almost done.
We're almost done.
The next three measures, or I guess actually the next four measures, relate to both the AHEC program's performance and the performance of the Office of Rural Health. The first two, which are number 20 and number 21, are the ones that we looked at earlier when we were looking at what the impact of fully funding the AHEC packages would be on OHSU's performance, and they did indicate that that would increase the number of MD clinical rotations and also increase the community physicians, number of community physicians who were also supervising medical students in the rural areas. As you can see here, they do have some additional increase in these targets even without the AHEC funding. These are the numbers that OHSU submitted, and LFO did not adjust them for the AHEC funding because that was not in the creatures budget. And finally, that's it. 23 represents all of the performance measures. The additional measures that are here are being listed. They are not going to be key performance measures, but as recommended by JLAC during the interim, these are figures that OHSU would continue to report to the legislature. They would not be key performance measures, and therefore there would not be specific targets set for them. But there's a large number of data that the institution will continue to report to the legislature if you approve this set of performance measures.
Thank you. Any other questions on specific performance measures? Dr. Halleck, I'm going to ask you a question that's related to a performance measure, but also is related to something in the School of Medicine request. And I've asked you this before, and it takes me a while to absorb the response, and it's something that we've been talking about. But key performance measure number two, access, the number and percent of first-year medical school positions filled by Oregon residents. And, of course, what the co-chairs did is they wanted to increase to 75% in-state enrollment in the MD class. And so can you just explain one more time for me why that matters? Because, again, one would think that it's not so much where someone is born, and if they're an Oregon resident, it's where they go to school and where they do their residency. And if the larger goal is to increase the number of physicians that we have in Oregon, it would seem that being Oregon residents, first and foremost, would not be the most important thing to measure.
Chairman Galizio, that is true. This will not increase the capacity or the number of doctors that are trained, nor will it, by our data, increase the number who remain in Oregon. Unlike most states, because it's a nice place to live and a variety of other reasons, the retention for non-residents is about the same as for residents. What it does do is provide more opportunities for Oregon residents to go to medical school. So it has that value. It does provide more slots, if you will, more positions for residents. And we're driven, frankly, by the cost of subsidizing resident tuition to watch that ratio very carefully based on our budget. So it does not increase our capacity. It does increase the number of medical school spots for Oregon residents. And it probably won't change the distribution of doctors either in the state or even in rural areas. The one factor that's been shown to actually change where people go is where they come from and what they say. They actually say pretty much what they're going to do. So in interviews, that data's been tracked nationally. You know, people say they want to practice in a rural area. That's your best indicator, frankly, that's what they'll ultimately do. And so there are various things you can do to try and select. But mostly it just affords more opportunities for residents and doesn't affect the capacity.
And just a follow-up, in the original request from OHSU, it was part of a request, though, to do something like this. Is that correct?
Yes, we submitted a set of policy option package requests, and it was one of our requests. And it wasn't our highest rank one, to be honest, but it was certainly one of our requests. It's always a tension, frankly, in terms of how many residents you can afford to admit. And so we were asked, well, what would it take for you to have a class of three-quarters Oregonians? And we said it would take the difference between non-resident and resident tuition times that many students, and that's really what this represents. It's a fairly straightforward calculation.
So would it be accurate to say that would not be as high of a priority as AHEC funding?
That's a very difficult question, Chairman Galizio, but indeed, in terms of expanding the capacity of healthcare workforce production, that would not have as great an effect.
Representative Jensen.
Yeah, it strikes me that the question was a little political as well as...
this is a policy question.
Oh, Well, I got too many residents here, two residents and residencies. Try to be straightforward with this question. What capacity do you have for residencies in the medical school? And what percent of our students have to go out of state or wherever, sort of thing? Where's that at?
Chairman Glizio and Representative Jensen, a different question. All the resident words I used before pertained only to medical school. The residents, or sometimes house staff, the 4 years you do after medical school,
right,
those residents, our capacity there is approximately the same. Right now we have about 560 residents. They're there about 4 years, so it's in the same order of magnitude as our medical school, a little bit higher, and we recruit them from all over the country. We are very sought after in many of our residency programs, and so it's a very competitive process there as well.
Can you represent Jensen?
Just a curiosity on this. So do we cover almost all of the specialties, or are there areas that we, for one reason or another, have
Chairman Francisco and Representative Jensen, we do cover virtually all of the specialties. It is a challenging thing to do because there's a federal cap. Residents are funded through an addition to Medicare, in addition to Medicaid, and through general medical education funds. And we are capped at how many we have reimbursed, and we exceed that cap right now by almost 100. And that means we subsidize them. And so you're limited really financially by how many that you can bring in, but we do cover virtually all the specialties.
So what you do is you send all of your lower-ranking doctors out of state, keep your higher end, and bring in the best for the regular residencies. Okay.
Representative Jensen, may I plead the fifth on that one?
Correct answer.
You a JD as well?
No.
Not that there was anything wrong. Well, colleagues, are there any objections or major changes that people want to make to the performance measures, or is that something that we could actually pass and get through today? Are there any major objections or heartburns on any performance measures? That was a no. I'm taking this as a no.
Mr. Chairman, so do we have a progress is always nice.
Progress is always nice. Right. I would like to, we could end on a consensus. And
The only concern I have is those performance measures where, you know, decisions that we make on this sheet are going to impact the grade.
Right, and my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is we can pass the performance measures but then shift the targets. Yeah. And would that be acceptable? And you said that that's...
Oh, that's certainly something you could do, yes.
Okay. Representative Morgan.
Am I correct in assuming that the whole package won't be actually put together until the budget is okayed, and then the performance measures are part of the package that includes the spending levels? And so it would seem that if we would be moving the whole package at some point with the recommendation to full, that when we were in that process, we could revisit the performance measures that needed the targets to be adjusted.
Mr. Chairman, I think to Representative Morgan, I don't think that, I don't know if she agrees with me, but we can still do the motion now, and when we have to make the full motion to basically send it on to the full committee with a recommendation, we can make any adjustments at that time. And we'll just avoid us having to go back through each performance measure during that, unless there was a purpose in doing
maybe
it.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's my concern.
No,
that's my hope.
I think that's fine, that as long as we're moving forward with the clear understanding that we intend to revisit the targets if we, as we move to adjusting the co-chair's budget level, that I think it's very appropriate to move these off the table.
Thank you. So, Senator Devlin, you have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the performance measures as presented by LFO, with the understanding that if necessary, that LFO will come back with additional modifications to the targets if that's necessary.
And Senator Devlin has moved that we move the performance measures, and they are recommended by LFO, are they? Yes, we have measured that as recommended by LFO, with the proviso that should we make changes, we can adjust the targets as per the budget that we eventually pass. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Motion carries.
I just have a suggestion I'd like to put on the table. It's come to me from one of my Senate members. If I took responsibility for the Senate members and you took responsibility for the House members, there are four specific areas involved in our discussions of OHSU. If each of you could just indicate to either your respective chair or vice chair sometime in the next day or so where you are on those items, what your priorities would be, it would be more helpful in our discussions with the co-chairs in trying to find some resolution on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Excellent suggestion. So I would appreciate it if on the House side I get that information, then we can have a fuller discussion. Thank you very much for today. And I think there's nothing else with that.
I just wanted to And again, just one final thing. Following up on the discussion that was recently occurring about the 75% in resident enrollment and that issue, I did want to say one thing that I know the co-chairs, when they were putting together their budget, wanted to assure that there would be access to Oregonians in the MD program, and noted that their budget, even though it was $6 million less costly than the governor's, did actually have more MD slots for Oregon residents than the co-chair, than the governor's. The governor's budget would have had 80 per class slots available for Oregonians, and the co-chair's budget had 90. That was one of the reasons why they have proposed what they did here. In terms of schedule, there is a work session for this budget scheduled for tomorrow, but my understanding is, Mr. Chair, that we will cancel that meeting. And the next meeting that we do have currently scheduled is on Tuesday. That is for a public hearing on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. So since we are not taking up this budget again, we would ask you to bring your books back with you, your OHSU books back with you next time. And Tuesday and Wednesday will be the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission.
So tomorrow new meeting, Monday new meeting.
As of now, that is
correct.
Goodness.
I know. I agree.
Everywhere.
Plenty to do, but please do get that information to
June 29th,
we will be signing by. Yes.
I'm nervous. I'm going to have a productive day.
Please bring those back to your office.
Our vice chair offered to take some.
All right. With that, close the work session on 5529, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much.